We're talking about state Supreme Court election results here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And the race for the seat held by retiring Justice Shirley Abrahamson hasn't officially been called, although we know that Judge Brian Hagedorn declared victory early this morning around 2 a.m. Well, let's go directly now to Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson for analysis. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
Well, I understand you've had election numbers for breakfast. Can you tell us what we know now about this race?
Well, what we know is that it is very close. As of right now, I think the number that we're looking at is Brian Hagedorn's lead of about 5,800 votes. So in a race where there's more than 1.2 million votes cast, that's a very small lead, but a need nonetheless. And because it's so close, it offers Judge Lisa Neubauer a chance to ask for a recount in this race. It's within 1%. And so she has that option ahead of her. Her campaign sent out an email last night fundraising for the prospect of a recount, because while it is close enough to call for a recount, it looks like it might be not so close that she wouldn't have to pay to conduct it.
And so her campaign would have to pay for a recount. Do we know what type of cost that is?
I'm not sure at this point. So We just had a recount in 2016 in the presidential race. And so that gives us some idea of what a recount
Jill Stein
would cost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. That was ordered by Jill Stein of the Green Party. She paid for it. That was actually the recount that led to the current law changes that we're under right now. This is a statewide race, so it's comparable in that way, although there were fewer votes cast than in a presidential race.
And Sean, we know that this became a very partisan race. We know that Judge Brian Hagedorn is conservative. Lisa Neubauer had liberal backing. Can you give us an overview of these campaigns leading up to yesterday's election and what we saw in terms of fundraising and position stance?
As far as positions, Lisa Neubauer was, I guess, everybody knew where these candidates were going into the race. I shouldn't say everybody. I mean, there could have been voters figuring this out as we got up to the end, because they don't officially have a Republican or Democrat after their name. But the themes that they hit on were somewhat similar in this race. Hagedorn talking about he's going to, adhere to the Constitution, rule of law, and he had Republican groups, and spending money on his behalf, including one that had a seven-figure ad buy tying his campaign and saying if you support President Trump, get out and support Brian Hagedorn. Lisa Neubauer had the backing of Eric Holder, the former U.S. Attorney General, and Eric Holder was calling her like the candidate of the people. They were attacking Democrats were attacking Judge Hagedorn for a bunch of blog posts that he wrote in 2005, where he laid out his views on, a range of social issues, calling Planned Parenthood a wicked organization, talking about a Texas court decision that struck down anti-sodomy laws there as opening the door to legalized bestiality. He came under attack for some of this stuff and for founding a Christian school in Wisconsin that had a code of conduct that banned homosexual conduct. And Hagedorn pushed back on that during this race and said that he was under attack for his Christian views and used that to rally the Republican base.
We're talking with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, looking at election results from last night, where we know that Judge Brian Hagedorn has declared victory, but it is a very, very close race. And, the issue, Sean, of recusal and conflicts of interest has come up in Supreme Court elections in the past. How was that raised during this campaign?
Recusal is in Wisconsin, in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. In most situations, it's up to the justice to make that decision. This is based on recusal rules that were adopted by the court over the last decade. And there really is just broad leeway for justices to make their own decisions in this race. I know it was raised with Judge Lisa Neubauer because of the support that she was getting from Eric Holder's group, the National Democratic Redistricting Commission. And so there was some question about whether if Holder's group made it before the court, would she recuse? She said she would if his group made it before the court. You know, if you're talking about other interests that spent money on this race, and some, it can be harder to trace that, you know, in some cases, especially if the groups that are spending money on these races don't disclose it. And, you know, essentially they are a name of a group, but you don't get to see their checkbook.
Let's go to Tom now, joining us from Burlington. Hi, Tom. What's on your mind?
We have in Wisconsin, we have a way of electing our judges. The whole process is completely tilted in the wrong direction. You have to have a law degree in order to run for judge, and that really tilts it that there are so many of these judges who run are unopposed because the lawyers are afraid to get up and run against a judge, and it completely tilts it. It tilts the whole thing off right from the very beginning.
Sean, what do we know about the process of electing judges in Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, they're officially nonpartisan races that does, when these races, especially Supreme Court races, roll around, you'll have people question whether that's really the way to go because the two parties kind of make clear who their choices are in these campaigns. You know, as far as whether you have to be a judge for Wisconsin Supreme Court races, you don't. Not be a judge and run for Wisconsin Supreme Court, and in fact, that has happened. What has practically happened over the past decade, especially though, is that the two parties have kind of realized that if you are not a judge, you set yourself up for a line of attack in these races that is advantageous to your opponents. You know that you don't even have any judicial experience, and here you are running for the court, and so now you see both parties, again, these are nonpartisan races, but practically speaking, both parties are putting judges up to run for these campaigns.
Sean, the state Supreme Court has had a conservative majority since 2008, and if Hagedorn prevails here, it means that the majority will continue. What would the significance of that be, particularly here in a state that's just elected a Democratic governor?
It's pretty significant because you're talking about taking away the chance for liberals to flip the court in 2020. So if Lisa Neubauer had prevailed or were to prevail in this race, it would have preserved the court's 4-3 conservative majority and set it up for a race in 2020 when conservative Justice Daniel Kelly is up for his first election. And that would have basically been a winner-take-all race where, whoever wins that race wins the ideological balance of the court. If Hagedorn ends up winning this race, then that would be a 5-2 conservative majority, which would somewhat diminish the focus on that 2020 race. It'll still be very important because there's only 7 justices and these are 10-year terms. But it would mean that it would be 2023 at the earliest before Democrats or liberals could get a majority on the court. So it's a pretty significant race.
Sean, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Sean Johnson is WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief. He's co-host of our Politics podcast. Up next, Wisconsin-based retailer Shopko will close later this year, and we'll find out how liquidation sales work and what we should keep in mind when shopping them. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about liquidation sales here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Liquidation sales are underway at Shopko as the company closes hundreds of stores by summer. Question is, are you getting a good deal at these liquidation sales? We see those yellow sandwich board signs with black lettering at intersections, 40% off, 70% off, all merchandise must go. Are you someone who seeks out these sales? What is good and bad about these sales? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Susan Bach now. She's the regional director of the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau. Susan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate, for having me.
So many stores, including Wisconsin-based Shopko, have turned to liquidation sales after filing for bankruptcy. How do these sales work? Can you put a framework around this?
Sure. Most of the time when retailers go out of business, the liquidation sale is run by a separate third party. And their job is, you know, not only to liquidate the inventory, but to get as much money for it as possible, especially in situations where the retailer is in bankruptcy. So I think people who are seeking out a great bargain, especially in the beginning of the sale, aren't really going to find that the deals or the discounts are as steep as they were expecting.
How long does the liquidation sale last?
Well, they usually put a fixed date on it. It will go as long as the stores open until the closing date. So as the retailer gets closer to the closing date, of course, the discounts are going to be much, much higher.
It's interesting that, you know, also on sale are some of the actual infrastructure sometimes of the store, shelving and other things.
Absolutely. If you are in the market for some shelving, that might be a great place to pick some up.
What can a store advertise? You know, when can they advertise a going out of business sale, which is otherwise known as a liquidation sale?
Well, the BBB does have a code of advertising, and you know, the pertinent items in that code is that, you know, a liquidation sale can't be ongoing. It can't last forever. It needs to have a fixed start date and end date. You know, we're worried about those retailers who seem to be always going out of business, but that certainly isn't the case here with Shopko.
So as you said before, that you may not get a good deal right when the liquidation sale starts, but we see the signs that say, you know, 40%, then 50, then the next day it's 70%. When do you start shopping these liquidation sales?
Well, it's important to know that the signs say up to 40%, up to 50%. So not everything in the store, of course, is going to be up to that high discount rate. So, you know, it's a risk. The longer you wait, the higher the discount is going to be. But you take the chance that the item that you want isn't going to be there. So, you know, we just suggest that, like any other purchase, you do some comparison shopping and, you know, don't impulse buy when you go into the store. Take your time to compare the price with other local retailers in the area. It may be a better deal somewhere else. And don't be afraid to price match with a non-closing competitor of Shopko. They may be willing to match the price that Shopko is offering. And then the buyer really gets the best of both worlds. They get that cheaper price, plus they get the service of from that store because they know they're going to be around for a while.
We're talking with Susan Bach. She is the regional director of the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau, and we're talking about liquidation sales as we see many brick-and-mortar stores close. Are you someone who seeks out liquidation sales? What is good or bad about these sales? Join in at 800-642-1234. Susan, after items are sold, how is the money spread out? Who receives it?
Well, you know, the liquidation retailer, the company that is handling the liquidation sale is going to use that money to pay off creditors. And the, you know, the courts establish who's going to be paid first. So if you are somebody who's holding a gift card, for example, you may be in line to be reimbursed for that, but I wouldn't take that chance. If you are holding a gift card for Shopko, make sure you use that right away.
And if you buy something at their liquidation sale, are you basically stuck with that item? Is it all sales final?
Yes, absolutely. So you know, make sure before you purchase that item that it's the right size and color, that it works. So if you are purchasing a larger item like an electronic, you want to make sure that it works before you leave the store. And pay with a credit card, because those credit cards offer additional protection. So if you do get it home and it doesn't work, you could file a dispute with your credit card company.
What about warranties? Are they covered in the same way?
No. Well, warranties are usually, you know, issued by the manufacturer of the item. So that's definitely something that you're going to want to ask the clerk in advance. You know, will the warranty still be applicable? And who should I contact in case I do have a warranty issue?
What happens to the things that aren't sold?
That's a good question. They could be sent to, you know, sold off or given to another company to sell in their inventory. It really kind of varies from retailer to retailer.
As more stores file for bankruptcy, are liquidation sales still the best option for stores to make back the funding?
That is a great question. You know, they're not going to get the full price that they were hoping, but they do need to liquidate the inventory. So it's a great question. It certainly can help benefit the consumers and the shoppers who are shopping there, because as we get closer to the closing date, they certainly are going to be seeing some pretty steep discounts.
Well, let's go to the phones now with Dara joining us from Madison. Hi, Dara.
Hi, so I was at ShopCover this weekend, and I bought a couple things, but also my boyfriend and I felt like the furniture, they sort of marked it up and then said it was discounted, because we were looking at some other stores, and the price that they were selling it for a discount was what other stores were just selling it for, like, without a discount.
So it sounds like Dara did some comparison shopping and didn't find a good deal there, Susan.
Yes, you know, we've heard people wondering about the same thing. You know, are they marking things up just so that they can mark them down? And that's definitely not okay. We haven't heard really too much of that from people shopping at ShopCo. But what you may be comparing is maybe the not the regular price at ShopCo, but, you know, prices you've seen in the past, maybe at another sale or a Black Friday sale. It's definitely not okay to mark something up just to mark it down later.
Do liquidation sales lead us to impulse buys?
Absolutely. Those huge yellow and black signs outside the store that you see, that could, you know, make people rush in the door thinking that they're going to get a really great deal when that's not necessarily the case.
So what can shoppers expect as we get closer to the final closing date of a store that's approaching the last days of their liquidation? What does that look like? What does that feel like?
Well, as we get closer to the closing date, the shelves are going to be kind of bare, empty. Things are going to be misplaced and out of place. So it's going to be harder. It's going to be less organized. So harder to find the items that you're looking for. Of course, it's going to be crowded, but, you know, those are the times when you really can get the best prices on things.
What happens to the items that aren't sold?
Great question. Will they be, you know, sold to a different retailer? Will they be donated? It really depends. I don't know.
Do you think that shoppers are getting a bit of liquidation sale fatigue? Because there have been just a number of brick and mortar stores that have gone out of business. Toys R Us, and we can go to Bon-Ton, we can go to ShopCo. You know, are we getting fatigued here?
I think so. There are, unfortunately, a lot of retailers that are going through this process. And I think maybe consumers are getting a little smarter about it. They know that, you know, that a liquidation sale isn't necessarily the best price that they're going to find. And it really is kind of exhausting to go in there and shop around and do the hunting for bargains. You know, I think you're right, Kate.
Can you tell us a little bit about the code of advertising that the Better Business Bureau uses as a guideline for retailers?
Sure, we do. We have lots of provisions in this code of advertising. It's really just a guideline that we give to retailers so as not to confuse or mislead any of their shoppers. And another thing that applies here in a liquidation sale is the use of the phrase up to. So up to 50% off or up to 60% off. So our guidelines would say if you are going to use that kind of advertising, that at least 10% of the inventory must be at that top discount range, and that you should also include, you know, what the lower range of that is. So the sign should really say something like up to 60% off, and then have a price range of 10 to 60% off discounts. So
I think the moral is do your homework.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Susan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Susan Bach is Regional Director of the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau. Coming up, we'll discuss the state budget and other political happenings with Governor Tony Evers. What is your priority for him? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back after a news update on the Ideas Network. Time to talk with Governor Tony Evers here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The 46th governor is kicking off his statewide budget listening tour this evening at UW-Stevens Point, the goal of gathering budget priorities from Wisconsinites. So what priorities do you have in the proposed state budget? What would benefit your community the most? What do you want the Evers administration to know about where you live? And what are your questions about the proposed biennial budget? We're at 800-642-1234. Email is ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Governor Tony Evers, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing well. So as of 7 o'clock this morning, the race for the Supreme Court was too close to call. We know Judge Brian Hagedorn claimed victory earlier this morning. And Judge Lisa Neubauer's team has already raised the idea of a recount. What are your thoughts about the state of that race and the idea of a recount?
Well, certainly if...
Are you there? I think we might have lost you. I don't think I hear you, but you can join in. 800-642-1234. If you have a question for Governor Tony Evers, who is joining us by cell phone, and the cell phone just dropped, what priorities do you have in the proposed state budget? What would benefit your community the most? And what do you want the Evers administration to know about where you live? Our number is 800-642-1234. You can send your thoughts and suggestions to ideas@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. And what are your priorities around the state as you see Governor Tony Evers start out on a listening tour of the budget? What would you like to know from him? Are you there, Governor Evers? Oh, and he just dropped again. We're having cell phone difficulties with the governor. So let's hear from you, Wisconsinites, as we try to connect with the governor. And let's hear about your priorities. What would you like the governor to accomplish here? And what do you want him to know about the budget? Perhaps you have a call about water or health care or something else in your area. Do you live in a rural or urban area? And what is it like in your community? What needs do you have? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings as we try to reconnect here with Governor Tony Evers and look at the state of the budget, the state of his proposals. We're going to also be asking about expansion of Badger Care and what that would mean for health care. We're going to look at the findings from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau that's showing that the $2 billion shortfall at the start of the next budget cycle. Governor Evers, are you there?
I'm going to try to stay this time, too.
All right. Let's see if we can hold here. Just your thoughts quickly on the Supreme Court election and last night.
Certainly, it certainly appears to be close enough that a recount is likely. I know everybody that voted even those that did not vote won every vote to count. And so it's likely to be a recount, and we'll just have to wait and talk to that to declare a victory.
We learned yesterday that a federal court allows Attorney General Josh Call to withdraw Wisconsin from a pair of lawsuits that are challenging the Affordable Care Act. You ran on a pledge to withdraw Wisconsin from these suits. So what does this mean for health care in the state and for Wisconsinites?
Well, certainly it's a step forward. We never believe that we should be in the position of restricting or not providing protections to those people that have pre-existing conditions, and that's exactly what we are doing. We are on the campaign trail saying we want to protect those pre-existing conditions. At the same time, we are in a lawsuit saying let's get rid of them. So I think it's a huge victory, if nothing else, about the need to message to the people of Wisconsin that we do care about pre-existing conditions.
Well, let's turn to Wisconsin's purse strings and your proposed budget. The report from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau shows that the plan, if adopted as written, would result in a nearly $2 billion shortfall at the start of the next budget cycle. Is that amount of structural deficit healthy for Wisconsin to take on?
Well, Wisconsin's been taking on that structural deficit for many, many years. And this is kind of weedy, but essentially probably several decades ago that I remember that the legislature determined that they didn't want to pay school districts in the fiscal year they should get it, and then pushed it off until a subsequent year. And as a result of that, we've had structural deficits ever since. And I think we need to reduce the structural deficit, but it means then now paying two of those large payments in one year. And we've gotten along without making this change. Obviously, we're going to struggle with that again, but it doesn't mean the budget isn't balanced. The number of revenue and expenditures are balanced. It's just that in order to kind of balance the books, we pay that one huge payment to school districts in July when we used to pay it in June.
Well, GOP leaders of the legislature's budget committee say you're spending billions the state doesn't have for a liberal wish list. What is your response to that?
Well, that's what these listening sessions have been all about. We did listening sessions last December. Lieutenant Governor Barnes and myself went all across the state saying, okay, we were elected, and we're elected for change. What issues are important to you? And we use that information to form a budget. And that budget is what we proposed to the legislature a few weeks ago or a month ago now. And so it's reflective of the needs of the people of Wisconsin. They asked us to deal with the issues of health care and making sure that our roads are in good shape and that we have a good education system. So our budget bill is balanced, and we think it's a good one.
We're going to talk transportation in just a bit, no doubt. But mm-hmm. Do you think that a lot is riding on your proposed Medicaid expansion? Because you'd be looking at an infusion of federal dollars that would free an estimated $320 million in state revenue over the biennium.
Well, certainly there's a lot of riding on it, and that's the reason we're doing it. We've left over $1 billion of our own tax dollars on the table in Washington, D.C., because my predecessor did not take advantage of expanding the health care system in Wisconsin to make it affordable and accessible. So we hope to be able to do that and gain over $300 million in federal money that will help us take care of some really important needs like infant mortality in the state of Wisconsin, especially among women of color, is high. We have to address that. We have mental health issues, opioid drug issues, and so we're taking all that infusion of money from the federal government to make our system affordable and accessible, and that's exactly what we talked about during the campaign, and we're going to follow up with that.
Well, let's take a call now. Let's go to Jeff joining us from Delafield. Jeff, hi. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have some concerns regarding criteria for school funding. We just defeated our referendum to exceed revenue limits last night. And in the discussion up to the referendum, there was data presented as to funding per pupil in other school districts are all around Waukesha County. So within the same county, there's a big difference in funding, state funding, I believe, for per pupil, and ours was much lower than some others. So our school district's going to have to make some significant cuts. And that's hard to understand when the school district right next door is getting more money per student from the state.
Jeff, thank you. What do we know, Governor, about disparities in per pupil funding?
Well, it's been there for a long time, and we've worked hard over the last, I've worked hard over the last 10 years as state superintendent to address that issue. The reason school districts like Delafield and others are going to referendum is because the state hasn't met their obligations. And that's exactly what we have in our budget. It's a large budget increase of over $1 billion. And what it does is it distributes the money fairly. And it distributes it in a way that reflects the needs of a school district, not just, you know, Delafield gets $1 and another district gets $1 and everybody gets $1. It's if your school district has more kids or more children that have significant learning issues, whether it's kids with disabilities or kids that come from poverty. My theory has always been if a kid needs an extra lift, they should get an extra lift. And sometimes that costs more money. And so equity is a watchword that we use to describe our budget, and we think it's a good one. And I think the people in Delafield will do well under our system. There's no reason why we have so many. There is a reason, why we have so many districts going to referendum. Sometimes it's a building program, but most of the time it's just money to keep the doors open, and we think that's an unsustainable position for school districts to be in.
Governor, Republicans have said they'll reject your proposed budget outright, write their own. Would you consider any changes to lower spending in your budget that would get Republicans on board?
Well, the budget is what we proposed. I haven't seen a counter proposal from the Republicans. And, you know, the only thing I know is that both sides want to get to 2/3. State funding for our schools, and that's a good thing. The bad thing is that they're taking a little different way to get there, from what I understand. So no, I'm not in a position to say that we're going to give, but I will also say though that I've always believed that finding common ground is an important attribute, and that's what we're all hoping to do. So we're hoping to make sure that school districts. Kids with disabilities and those that need mental health services get that, and have a fair funding system for our schools and for our kids.
We're talking with Governor Tony Evers. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. How do you want Wisconsin to look in 2 years when it's time for another budget cycle? What policy steps do you think that the state needs to take right now? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with more discussion with Governor Evers right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with Governor Tony Evers about top issues hitting the state on the day he starts a budget listening tour in Stevens Point. And you have a line at 800-642-1234 as we look at these top budget issues and what you face in your community. Let's go back to the phones now with Peter joining us in Madison. Hi, Peter. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have one comment first, and that's, to be honest, I really appreciate the budget because I do have a child with special needs. So, it's really great to see somebody actually cares. I wonder about the ending the embargo on marijuana distribution so that we could actually generate revenue to pay for some of this budget. And then also just kind of wondering what other options the governor's been thinking about for generating new taxable revenue without really impacting too much of the general population.
Peter, thanks for the call. Governor, let's first focus on the issue of marijuana and legalization. Where are you at with that?
Well, our budget includes two things. One is to make sure that those that are charged with small amounts are charged with a crime for possessing a small amount of marijuana, that it's decriminalized, that it's no longer a felony. And I think that's important for a whole number of reasons. One is we have had many, many referendum across the state that have not dealt with this issue, and the overwhelming number of people want to make sure that make sure that it is not a criminal offense for small amounts, but B, would like to have medicinal marijuana available. So those are the two things we're dealing with in this budget. This could mean at some point in time that recreational marijuana might be a possibility.
Do you see traction with lawmakers at all?
Not much. In the medicine side, the medicinal side, we do. And so that's where we're starting this conversation. So there might be some, benefits as far as, well, there's certainly criminal justice benefits, decriminalize it, but medicinal may bring in a small amount of additional revenue, which is important. But I think for Peter and others, I want to cycle back to, if you're thinking of additional revenue, just accessing the Medicaid expansion money will bring in $320 million of additional resources that we can turn around and invest in the people's health care in the state of Wisconsin. That's a huge amount of money, it'll go a long way. You know, the thing that I'm reminded of here is that for both callers, Peter and Jeff, that attending these listening sessions are important. We now have a budget out there. We want people to be part of it. We're going to be in Stevens Point this evening, and April 3rd, Tuesday the 3rd, at the UW Stevens Point at the Dreyfus Center from 6 to 7:30 p.m.
Well, we have those details too, and I just want to get back to the phones though. Governor Alex in Merrill has a question. Alex, hi.
Yes, hi. I was wondering what was in the budget for environmental protection, and if there was an increase from Walker's budget.
And absolutely.
Yeah, you declared this year the year of clean drinking water and dedicated money to lead pipes. How has that been received?
It's been received well. In fact, I think the speaker has put together a task force on this issue too, so it's obviously he has some interest. But yes, we are putting additional resources to make sure that every citizen in the state of Wisconsin can feel confident that they're drinking the water that's coming out of their tap is clean, and their children aren't going to be impacted by something negative in there. In addition, we're beefing up the Department of Natural Resources to make sure that they're in a position to inform legislators and people in the executive branch about the importance of science in making decisions. And so we're looking forward to that and investing in that department and also investing in water to make sure that our families are safe in Wisconsin.
Well, Kelly from Cascade called in to share that she moved here from Pacific Northwest, where all the states provided assistance to help farmers stay afloat. She moved back to Wisconsin and has seen farms disappear. She wants to know what you're committed to when it comes to helping farmers.
Well, we're working with folks from the University of Wisconsin and other institutions of higher learning. We at Economy.
And you're breaking up there. Governor, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yes. Carry on.
Yes, I'm saying we're working with folks from the University of Wisconsin and other institutions of higher learning in Wisconsin to find the best way to make sure that our farmers are safe economically. This is a very difficult issue. Most farmers in the state, whether it's dairy farmers, whether they're large farmers or a family farm, they have done exactly what we've asked them to do, and that's embrace technology. And they have, and as a result, we have an overabundance of dairy products that more than the market can absorb. And so we have to figure out either to expand our markets or to diversify agriculture in the state to make sure that it's not we're just not wholly dependent on dairy products, but other products that may be more more diverse and more profitable for our farmers.
Let's talk manufacturing here for a moment, focusing on Kimberly-Clark and Foxconn. Kimberly-Clark is shutting its Neenah plant by the end of next month, and Foxconn news has been all over the board. How are you keeping manufacturing on track in the state?
Well, that's a great question. We're working with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation to make sure that the Foxconns of the world, and I'll use them as a prime example, are doing what they need to do to make sure they meet the agreements that have been set out by the state government and the local municipalities. Our concern around Foxconn is being addressed. We now have somebody that monitors and works with them every single day, 24 hours a day, to make sure that we know exactly what their plans are and to make sure that over the long haul they communicate that appropriately with the people of the state of Wisconsin. Consistency and accountability for the taxpayers is our watchword on both of these issues, and we have to make sure that the agreements that WEDC are followed through.
Let's go to Paula now, joining us from rural Wapaka County. Paula, hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind? Quickly.
My concern is internet access in rural counties, most specifically rural Wapaka County, because I don't see Wapaka listed on any of the lists of rural counties that are slated to get better internet. Our internet is expensive, slow, and limited, so that we run out at the end of the month unless we're very, very careful. I need it for my job, and I'm running around going to libraries and sitting in parking lots in order to do my job, and I feel like better internet would help economic development in rural Wisconsin.
So, Paula, concerned, Governor, about internet connection, about broadband. I know we just lost you there for a moment. Yep. What can you tell us about internet access in rural areas?
Sure, and we could probably talk about cell phone service too, but I won't do that. We have doubled the amount of money that has been engaged in the issue of expanding broadband across the state. We're setting a goal by 2025 to have the highest level of broadband possible for everybody. It's not just you have broadband, but you can use it maybe once or twice a week. This is a top priority for economic development in northern Wisconsin, and frankly, our schools do interaction with kids at home. You name it, we have to do it. We've set aside lots of money and bonding for that money to make sure that that happens in Wisconsin. That's a top priority for us.
Governor, we're just about out of time here. A few seconds left. What keeps you up at night? What's the hardest part of your job 3 months in?
Oh, well, making sure that the people of Wisconsin, their needs, as they've described during the campaign and now during these listen sessions we're having across the state, are met. You know, it's one thing. I know that the representatives in the legislature represent the people that elect them, but I've been elected by all the people of Wisconsin, and during the listening sessions, this is what they told me they wanted, and we're going to do our best to make sure that it happens.
Governor Evers, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good day, Kate.
You too. Tony Evers, Governor of Wisconsin, he and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes will be at a listening session tonight at UW Stevens Point starting at 6 o'clock. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.